This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Donald Stratton was a gallant man, a life well lived, a man well loved, and a service never forgotten.
That's Colorado Senator Cory Gardner at the memorial service for USS Arizona survivor Don Stratton. Don's body was returned to his native Red Cloud, Nebraska this week. You'll hear more from that service, including some powerful words from Senator Gardner in a moment. And if you're a reader, I highly recommend you pick up the best-selling book, All the Gallant Men. It's Don Stratton's amazing story from Pearl Harbor and beyond, written with the help of Ken Geyer. With Stratton's passing at the age of 97, there are now only two men alive today, California's Luke Hunter and Utah's Ken Potts, who were on the USS Arizona on December 7, 1941. Before we hear more from the memorial service for this American hero, let's hear more in his own words. After being burned over the majority of his body on December 7th and spending the better part of a year in the hospital, Don received a medical discharge. His service to our country was complete. But what did he decide to do? Re-enlist, of course.
Well, that was just another thing that happened. I wanted to go back into the Navy, so I went back after I was home for about a year, and my whole left side healed up really much from the medical discharge. So I re-enlisted and went back in, and they put me on I went to boot camp again because I hadn't caught up on my shots and stuff, and I went to island there in the bay, and they put me aboard a destroyer, DD-406, USS Stack, STACK, and we headed for the South Pacific right away, and we were in on the invasion of the whole land in New Guinea, and couple islands offshore there, and we went to Guadalcanal, picked up troops to put in the Philippines and the Lady, and we were in the Battle of Leyte Gulf, and we were in the Battle of Luzon Gulf, and we led all the invasions in with the mine sweeps and the destroyers protecting them, and finally Okinawa, and we were on pick of a patrol 300 miles north of Okinawa between there and Japan, and for the kamikazes coming down, and let them know down below that they were on their way, and that was kind of hazardous. We lost 5 ships one night there, and one time there was over 100 ships and sunk and damaged in Karamret or Wise Man Cove and at that time, and then they sent me back to the States, and the war was over, and I had a game.
And I understand that you lived that, and that you've told your story many times. So that is, in a way, old hat to you. But you do understand how crazy that sounds to most people, right? That you were burned over the majority of your body. You still don't have any feeling in your fingers that you haven't had for 75 years. You're recovering for a year in the hospital. You've been medically discharged. But you sign up to go back, and you end up fighting the rest of the war. Why? Why was that so important to you?
Well, it's just one of those things that happens, I guess.
Was it?
Felt like maybe I should be there, but whatever happened, but that's the way it worked.
And the title of your book is All the Gallant Men, and you're honoring those who died December 7th and really the 406,000 Americans who died in the war. But it strikes me that just that action you took, I mean, you are the gallant man. Did you feel that you were doing something beyond what was asked of you?
No, the heroes were still out there.
Still on your ship.
Yeah.
What'd your parents think when you re-enlisted?
Well, actually, they didn't want me to go, but they said, if that's what you're made up your mind to do, it's your life to live.
Did you feel that you were avenging the deaths of your shipmates?
Not really. It was just the thing that surprise attacked and didn't get a chance to fight back too much, so I was still in the same predicament. I loved the Navy, and so I went back in.
Well, I'm sure you've heard a lot of people say a lot of things to you over the years, but I've interviewed 1,000 World War II veterans and many courageous, incredible men who blow me away with their stories. But just your story and what you just shared and your determination, that's really remarkable, sir.
Well, like I tell everybody, everybody had to be someplace.
Yeah.
And I was there.
And it's not like you took a Navy desk job somewhere. I mean,
No.
Statistically, the only thing more dangerous than being on a destroyer was being on a submarine.
I had to go through boot camp again the second time also, too. But
on the destroyer, and I can tell that you're proud of that ship.
That was like a 40-knot ship.
What were your duties on that destroyer?
Well, it was a gunner's mate. We were in charge. We had 4 or 5-inch guns and 2 dual 40-millimeter and about 8 probably 20-millimeters. And we had Y guns for the submarines, and we had torpedo tubes on board. So it was pretty well put together. And like I said, it was like 40 knots. That's long. That's moving across the water pretty fast for 1,500 tons of iron.
And what was your perspective in light of what you'd already been through? I mean, you've been through the most devastating day in American naval history.
Well, it wasn't nothing. I don't know that I even thought about that. That was just past history, and it was already gone, and we're looking to the future.
Well, I guess what I wonder is, did you think, hey, I've already been through the worst, and I survived that, so nothing's going to get me? Did you think?
No, I just thought, this is where I belong, and this is where I volunteered to be, and we've got to be here till it's over.
And did you have some moments on that destroyer that you look back on now and say you were fortunate to survive those two?
Well, it was like I come out of the hatch one night at general quarters, and an impulse charge went off right outside the hatch, throwing a depth charge overboard for submarine contact, and it kind of flashed back to me, and no, not again, you know.
Yeah.
But that was one of the things that happened, and like you said, everybody had to be someplace, and I was there.
What did it feel like when that war came to an end, having been where you were when it started?
Well, it felt great. I mean, everybody was hilarious, and I was in San Diego at a gunnery school there when that happened. And I just got home from back from 30-day leave, and I was ready to get discharged again. I got discharged in San Diego on December the 4th, 1945.
And went on. Maybe what I'm learning about you is this: you're just one that is used to living with danger, or you live on the wild side a little bit. What made you think that being a...
Not necessarily. It's just all in a lifetime, like I said, to work with the divers. I worked offshore. I was a barge master on one of the offshore largest drilling ships afloat at one time. And we worked in Alaska. We worked in South America. We worked in Colombia. We worked in Kuwait. We worked all over.
You would dive on oil rigs.
Well, I was just a tender. I'd run the phones and sending all the equipment to the divers and getting them up and getting them into decompression chamber and running the chamber and getting them back out on deck. And that's what diving is considered. You get them in the water and you get them up and decompress them, get them out. Everything works out all right. We have a few difficulties every once in a while, and we come through all of them. We never did lose anybody. So I was on the phones to the divers, and I'd send all the equipment to them and talk to them and told them what to do and what not to do and when to come up and when to stop for decompression, what this and that and the other. But so.
And you did that for, what, 30, 40 years?
Well, I don't know exactly how long, a long time.
Did any of those guys know your story?
Oh, I think they all do. They knew that I was a survivor of the Arizona and all that, so we never did talk about it much.
You mentioned when you were on the stack and that moment came, you flashed back to December 7th. Is that something that happens every once in a while, that those images come flooding back to you?
Well, sometimes just certain aspects that happen makes you think back a little bit, but I don't think about it much anymore at all.
And you went all these years, and you talked about it plenty, but now the book. What made you want to or convinced you that you needed to get all this in print and have this story told?
Well, that was nothing to my doing. Some young lady read something about my surviving the Arizona and whatever, and they talked to her father, who was a writer. His name was Ken Geyer. And he came here for an interview, and we talked about this and that and other, and then he asked me questions, and I gave him answers, and he put it in a book, and this is the way it happened.
How do you feel about it? How do you feel about the book?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, I keep getting calls every day about I just read your book, and I think it's one of the best books I ever read in my life. And I hope it helps somebody and a reminder of things that could happen.
Yeah, that was my question. Because there's going to be thousands and thousands and maybe even millions of people who end up reading your book. What do you want them to get out of it? What's the most important message you want them to glean?
Well, we have to be alert in the United States here, and we have problems with ISIS and all the other stuff that's going on. And it's just a reminder that every day you should think about things that could happen in this United States and things that shouldn't happen. And if you're alert, and as you should be, why, maybe it won't happen. But we have to be very vigilant. There's people in countries that would try to tear down our aspect of way of living, and we can't let that happen.
How many times have you been back to Pearl?
Well, quite a few times. I think the first time I went back was 25 years later, but I was there for the 75th, but quite a few times in between.
What made the biggest impression on you there this last time, the 75th anniversary, where really the world's attention was on that memorial?
Well, it was just an idea that they entombed two sailors off the Arizona on there at the same time I was there, and the wall is there with all the casualties and whatever, and it just makes you think what could happen again and how vigilant we should be, and it's something that we should think about every day.
That was Don Stratton's mission for more than 78 years after the attack on Pearl Harbor, to honor his fallen shipmates and to help keep America alert. In the last few years, he was determined to honor Joe George. That was a name for decades that he didn't know, but once he found out the identity of the man who had disobeyed an order and tossed the heaving line from the USS Vestal that saved his life and those of five other sailors, not to mention all their descendants born since, Don and his family made it their mission to see Joe George recognized. U.S. Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado was instrumental in making that happen. He spoke at Stratton's memorial service as a B-25 bomber circled in tribute overhead in Colorado Springs.
As we hear the planes flying over us to commemorate the life of Donald Stratton, I can't imagine what it must have been like for Don Stratton. Velma, thank you for sharing him with us all. You know, December 6th, he wrote about how he believed he was the luckiest kid on earth, the luckiest Nebraskan on earth who could be at Pearl Harbor, the most beautiful place on earth. Woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning on December 7th, got ready for a day, put on the Sailor's Away uniform that morning, t-shirt, press shorts, sailor's hat. 5:30 Reveille was over the intercom, and the ship came to life, and a few hours later at 7:55, Donald Stratton could hear the bombs and the airplanes and seeing what was happening across the harbor. While at 8:06, a 1,700-pound bomb fell from the sky 10,000 feet above, going through four decks of steel to the munitions of the ship, exploding, sending a 500 to 600-foot fireball into the sky. Where that morning, Donald Stratton, who had been leading the effort, anti-aircraft efforts, along with his fellow shipmates, stood their ground to fight back. And of course, we all know the story from there, how he was injured, spent a year recovering, went back into the fight, served in the Pacific. And how did he say it, Randy? He may have gone out on a stretcher, but he came back on a destroyer with reinforcements. The fight didn't stop there, because he spent then the time of his life finding Joe George, who threw that lifeline to him on the USS Arizona to save his life, lives of others. I first met Donald Stratton and the family when they came to our office talking about Joe George and what we could do to posthumously recognize Joe George, the man who saved his life, and the fight that he continued on for his life, for Joe George, to make that recognition happen. On December 7th, 2017, that indeed did happen. Donald Stratton won yet again, because Joe George received the Bronze Star with V for Valor device at the Pearl Harbor Memorial on the USS Arizona. And he was once again there. A funny thing has happened, I think, to the Stratton family, because Donald Stratton has become bigger than Donald Stratton. He's become bigger than all of us. He's become a symbol of who we aspire to be, a nation that we know we are. a people who come together in time of great challenge and strife and conflict to rise above, to get back on your feet, to get into the fight, to continue a life, to share it with others and make it meaningful with others. He's an example that we hope we can all live to be. He's somebody that I know this country will greatly miss. I was honored to have known him and the family. And I look out right now at what Donald Stratton and Velma have made possible, but knowing too that Joe George has made it possible for you all to be here. I don't know if I would have had the courage or the strength to be there when Donald Stratton was there, but thank God he was there. And thank God he is here with all of us, because I know that at the pearly gates, Reveille this morning was a little bit more full and roll call's almost complete, not just for the USS Arizona, but for a generation that made this country.
Powerful words from Senator Cory Gardner at the memorial service for USS Arizona survivor Don Stratton. It's time for another break, but we're not done yet. We'll hear more of Don Stratton's own words when we come back and more tributes to a man whose legacy endures. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.